platform.
Hello, everyone. Welcome. It's Saturday Night Live with the Hoax Busters again. We hope to have a good show for you tonight. Lots of things to talk about. We hope we can have some of the visitors come in. We can go from there, too, with things that they have to say. And we're happy to be able to be on the Speak Free Radio. Appreciate that we can do this. And we'll be getting into Money Tree Publishing books later on at the break. But we do have a protocol on what we do. We go over some information there. And I can see Miss Diane has a cat running around her head. That's really good.
On my shoulder. Yep.
whatever. But, okay, so what we do is we start off with going over the book, okay, 6 Million Fact or Fiction. And Peter Winter wrote that book, excellent book. There it is right there. I got it right in my library right there. And obviously, I got the PDF. I like to read the PDFs, but excellent book to have. And we'll go over some of those books later on, the books that you should have in your library if you want to have the best books out there to have. So, Miss Diane, maybe you could continue on because we cover the book for about 10 or 15 minutes. And we discuss some parts of it if we do. And then we go on from there. And we never know where the show is going to end up. It all depends who comes in, who has something to say, and that's pretty much that. So if you want to start off the discussion with the book and kind of review the chapter, tell us where we are in the book, and that'll be that.
Just a minute. I opened my bedroom door, so I thought they would go in there, because they really like being in there. Now they're coming up here. Okay, chapter 13, Belzec. Given little prominence because of unbelievable allegations. It's so apparently nonsense that it's just blown poo-pooed. Belzec was established in mid-1940 as a work camp to provide labor for defenses along the border with the Soviet Union. The camp was not extensive and remained relatively unnoticed, at least by the Holocaust storytellers, for nearly 2 years until March 42, when it was suddenly transformed into a killing center.
Yeah.
According to the Holocaust storytellers, the extermination camp of Belzec operated only from March 42 to 43, a total of 15 months. During this period, it claimed anywhere between 430,000 to 500,000 Jews were killed in this camp, in addition to an unknown number of Poles, Gypsies, and even Czech children. As will be discussed, the camp's location and its immediate setting indicate clearly that it was primarily a forced labor center. Setting this evident observation aside, the first real problem with the allegations arises with when one performs basic arithmetic. In other words, we often say the math doesn't add up. If the camp functioned for 15 months, which is equivalent to 10,800 hours, and 500,000 people were killed, this would imply that 47 Jews were killed every hour, continuously, day and night, for the entire 15 months. I know what I'm going to do. Okay. Is, of course, not feasible, as it would necessitate huge numbers of personnel, substantial logistical support, and above all, a highly sophisticated execution technique. Moreover, Belzec camp lacked crematory. Oh, no. Which would have been essential if its primary purpose was extermination. Indeed, none of the Reinhardt camps possessed proper crematoria, and all relied supposedly on open cremation pyres, a fact which is ignored by the Holocaust storytellers, and which we have learned and will continue to learn how inefficient and ineffective and impossible that method was. The first claims of Belzec's incredible execution methods, electrocution and drowning in excrement. I think this little creation came as a result of Swindler's List. And then it leads into the Nuremberg trial charges Nazis with extermination by electrocution at Belzec. And that's kind of important to understand that they keep that they're reaching for things. The method of execution at Belzec to gas chambers. Despite the electrocution method being officially entered into the Nuremberg records, the Holocaust storytellers realized that death by electrocution or drowning in feces was too far-fetched even for the most gullible believers. As a result, by the 1960s, the method of execution had been changed to a Soviet diesel tank engine which pumped fumes into several gas chambers that could then allegedly be opened by large side doors for the removal of bodies. In this context, it is valuable to note that the description of the Belzec gas chambers comes from the Gerstein statement, or rather statements, a source which has previously noted was completely fabricated and full of the most outrageous inventions and lies. And then the stories were reworked, and they were attempting to create a kind of a believable scenario. They kept running up against a wall of, this isn't believable. According to the narrative, the first gassings, quote unquote, were carried out in three wooden gas chambers from March to June of 42. It is claimed that in the first 3 months, at least 80,000 Jews were murdered in these wooden gas chambers and buried in nearby pits. In July of 42, it's asserted a second set of gas chambers was constructed, this time of brick and concrete, and the wooden gas chambers were dismantled. I wonder why. I guess they didn't work quite as well as they'd hoped. They didn't get the numbers that they wanted. Again, the math isn't adding up. According to the narrative, the new gas chambers could kill 1,000 people at a time. And by December 42, between 350 and 400,000 Jews were purportedly killed in these gas chambers. The last transport of Jews supposedly arrived at Belzec on December of 42, after which there were no more gassings. By this time, it is claimed that Nazis had already started excavating the hundreds of thousands of corpses from the pit graves and had begun burning them in the open on pyres constructed using railroad tracks and wood from the local forest as fuel. The bones were then crushed using a lot of air quotes on these. Undisclosed method. The entire camp was then, the story goes, plowed over and disguised as a farm. As is always the case when the claims of the Holocaust storytellers are objectively assessed, they prove to be physically impossible. Firstly, it's necessary once again to emphasize that it borders on the impossible to murder large numbers of people with diesel fumes alone. Yeah, wooden gas chambers. Yeah, how solid and airtight would those be? This claim should in itself be reason enough to question the Belzec story. However, even setting this significant objection aside, the assertion that hermetically sealed gas chambers could be constructed of wood isn't utterly impossible. Wood, by its very nature, is a porous building material, and it would be practically and physically impossible to construct a hermetically sealed gas chamber from wooden planks. And this becomes particularly evident when examining images, and Jim has done this, and Diana has brought these up too, of the actual gas chamber at San Quentin State Prison. The assertion that over 400,000 corpses were cremated on pyres composed of wooden rails within a few months is another physical impossibility. Simply harvesting enough wood, this kills me, to cremate that many bodies would be an unachievable task. A Hindu cremation in India, often observed on the banks of the Ganges, necessitates at least about 660 pounds of wood per body. Therefore, 400,000 bodies would require a minimum of 264 million plus pounds of wood. This quantity of wood is implausible, and the labor to procure and prepare it would surpass the capabilities of the limited German personnel. Not to mention, there wouldn't be a tree in all of Western Russia. Yet this evident dilemma does not deter the Holocaust storytellers from advancing the narrative. Another convenient fact for the Holocaust storytellers is the absence of official German documents, plans, or any descriptions of the camp's appearance, despite the claim that its gas chamber system was replicated at other Reinhardt camps. Hey, if they don't have the documents or the facts, make them up. And that seems that everybody will believe them because, after all, it is a Holocaust story and anything goes. An individual named Rudolf Reeder, one of the most quoted eyewitness survivors in his memoirs, claimed to have worked as a Sonderkommando member. Okay, now that's going to call into question his complicity with the so-called death camps, because Sonderkommandos facilitated it. Well, we had to, because we had a gun pointed at our heads. Really? Well, that worked. We had to follow orders. That didn't work if the Germans attempted to use that excuse. Reader's book contains many patently false claims and does and appears not to have been written by someone who had actually been in a camp, let alone Belzec. So it's a total fabrication and fairy tale. The more glaring errors include, and this is the interesting part, a claim that the Gestapo ran the camp overseen by the SS, a notion which is clearly refuted by anyone familiar with the role of the Gestapo, who never guarded camps or even came near any camps. Their work was not in the camps. A claim that the courtyard into which the trains arrived was 1 square kilometer in size, when aerial photography from 44 indicates that the entire camp was only a quarter of that size. A claim that the gas chambers were powered by gasoline engines and that he personally repaired them when they malfunctioned. Presently, the Holocaust storytellers assert that the gassing was done using diesel engines. So to insert gasoline engines is, okay, now we've got a, so what is your story? A claim that 10,000 Jews were gassed every day at the camp. If this rate were accurate, over 1 million Jews would have been gassed during the 3.5 months when Reeder claimed to have been a prisoner at the camp. For the 15 months when Belzec was operational, 10,000 victims per day would amount to the camp having disposed of over 4 million Jews. Do the math. A claim of 6 gas chambers accommodating 750 people each. This assertion, like his claim of the 10,000 murdered per day, is physically impossible given the dimensions he ascribed to these gas chambers, approximately 25 square meters. The figure of 750 individuals fitting in one chamber seems to have been borrowed directly from the confession of Gerstein, as this exact number appears in his statements. Reeder clearly just integrated these claims into his memoirs, and had there been any movies, he would have put those in too. A claim that these millions of dead were interred in a series of pits adjacent to the gas chambers. This is physically implausible, considering the camp size and the space 2.5 million bodies would occupy. We don't have a real concept in our mind of how you lay out 2.5 million people. A claim that these millions of bodies were subsequently exhumed in 43, incinerated and crushed, saying that this is the reason these vast graves with millions of bodies cannot be found. More fairy tales. Surprisingly, Reeder's assertion of having served on a death commando seems as dubious as his other claims. If one were to accept his account, he would have been 61 years old when assigned to the death commando. Allegedly, excavating mass graves, transporting deceased bodies from the gas chambers, and other such tasks on a daily basis. The likelihood of the Gestapo selecting an individual of his age for such arduous labor is highly improbable, especially considering, as the Holocaust storytellers argue, the multitude of younger newcomers they could have chosen from. Again, what's wrong with this picture? Mm-hmm. Anyway, in spite of Reeder's memoirs being riddled with evident inaccuracies, they are still referenced by Holocaust storytellers as proof of Belzec's operations and were the primary evidence during the 1960 trial of former Belzec camp personnel in Germany. This is where they catch it. Belzec forensic digs contradict official history. That's another thing. There are a number of very detailed forensic comparisons, and which, you know, again, the issue of the wood, the number of people they're claiming that in the 3 month period, was that it? 4 million people would have been killed. The impracticality of such is astounding. The Belzec trial in 1963, there was an effort to prosecute 8 former SS guards from Belzec, but faltered as 7 of the accused were acquitted almost instantly due to a lack of evidence. This outcome arose even though some of them had given statements in which claims that murders and gassings had occurred at the camp. However, each one professed not to have been personally involved. That was also the go-to default testimony. Well, rather than saying there wasn't anything like that going on there, we don't know if there was. We just weren't involved. All right, the actual purpose and function of Belzec Camp. Like Kelmo, served as a dispersal point for Jews being deported further eastward. So it was transit. The camp's origin dates back to June of 1940 when the German army decided to construct an anti-tank trench as part of a general defensive position between the Bug and San rivers along the German-occupied Polish-Soviet border. This formed part of the Otto program of military upgrades along the border with the Soviet Union. And then you can read about that particular plan, auto program. Consequently, in September 1940, 6,000 Jews were transported from Warsaw to this hard word in Poland, Rubizow, a town near the River Bug, and were set to work. These detainees were then housed in a labor camp named Belzec. So the purpose was housing and then transporting of, I got company, of, okay, let's, all right, let's, okay, housing and then transporting to other positions in a labor work situation. Belzec was, in fact, the largest of 10 forced labor camps in the area, and many thousands of Jews were employed in the official SS border securing construction commando for this purpose. All right, you. Okay. Therefore, there is ample evidence, even from Jewish sources, that the Belzec camp was primarily a forced labor camp and, for a time, a deportation distribution center. In conclusion, there are no known official records detailing the planning, construction, administration, and actual use of Belzec for extermination purposes, and the allegation is based solely on a few easily refuted statements rather than concrete physical evidence. But why use concrete physical evidence when you can make it up as you go along? Ta-da!
Okay, is that it?
That's it.
Okay, so I was wondering if Diana could bring up, she had a good picture of where the Belzec camp was on a map, which I thought was pretty good. Because, you know, people, I think it's good to show people on a map where these camps were.
And oh, yeah.
All these camps that we're talking about now were towards the Soviet end.
That's Soviet border. That's right.
Yeah, they were there because, I think the game plan that Hitler wanted to eventually, he thought he was going to win the war with the Soviet
yes.
Union.
Yes.
And he felt that he was just going to be able to walk right into there and establish his camps and get all the workers there at that point. But it didn't happen. And so in 1940, 41, I mean, Hitler started losing. I mean, he started losing to the Soviets. And he had to close the camps down pretty much. That's basically what happened. But it doesn't matter. All these camps were just transit camps to get people eventually into the Soviet Union.
Based on what Heydrich's wife, Reinhard Heydrich's wife, had said in her discussion with him, they were talking about establishing settlements for Jews in deep inside Russia. That had already been planned, closer to Siberia, more pleasant areas, if there is such a thing in the Soviet Union. Of Siberia, and that was the plan. Okay, are the map down here about the middle where the blue water is?
Okay, well, this Poland, it's showing you Poland. Oh yeah, that's a good map there because that shows you where Russia
Belzec is,
and then it shows where Belzec is.
Right on the border.
Belzec's pretty close to Ukraine today, right? I guess. So anyway, yeah, that's where Belzec was. The thing I remember about Belzec, the nonsense that they talk about Belzec, is they said that they came into a room, it had a metal plate on the floor.
Oh, yeah, the electrocution.
And the people stepped on the plate, and then they submerged it in water or something, and they electrocuted them. And then the plate came back up, and the bodies were all laying on the big metal plate. And then they pushed more electricity through the plate until it got all red hot, and then it just burned them all.
Oh, for Pete's sake. The problem, as I understand it, like if you're taking, I've seen a lot of, you know, murder shows that show this, someone's in a bathtub and you throw in a hairdryer. Well, the hairdryer is no longer usable after that. It completely shorts it out.
Well, there's so much thing wrong with this.
Yeah.
Do you know the amount of electrical power you would need put into first of all, to have a plate on the floor that
rises and falls
and down, goes up and down, gets electricity through it, turns red hot, burns.
When something gets red hot, that also, again, each of these devices are vulnerable to extinction.
Well, I know, but the point is the amount of electricity you would need. Mm-hmm. To do that, you'd have to have a power plant somewhere to do this. But they just tell people this nonsense, and people believe it. They someone said it. They gotta be truthful. They gotta be telling you what's true.
It's like the poof theory that you said. The Germans must have created that because they're, you know, all these Jews have died, but there's no proof of that was the case. Poof. They must be magicians, huh?
Oh no, I just laughed because maybe we could talk about the guy that called last night since we got some
time. Absolutely.
So anyway, I have my phone. People can call me. I leave my telephone number, and most of the calls are good calls. Okay, mm-hmm. that I get. But last night, somebody from California, older guy, he's probably about 75, I would think. He sounded older than me, but not much. And he called up and he was trying to tell me that I was wrong and the Holocaust was real and I'm full of shit that I'm talking about all these things and I'm lying. And I just had a really good conversation with him. Or I tried to. I was very calm with him and I let him talk. And then that's like, you know, okay, can I respond now or what? Can I talk? And so I talked, you know, first thing he said to me, he was talking about the gas chambers and the people went in to take showers and gas came out of the shower heads. I said, that's impossible. You can't put gas into a pipe that has water in it.
And the Cyclone B doesn't work that way.
It doesn't work that way. You can't do that.
Yeah.
And then I explained to him, I said, there were no gas chambers. You're telling me a bunch of crap. All right, there's no gas chambers. And so the thing is, he and this is what all Jews do when you have a conversation with them. Let me just tell you right now, okay? I try to be accommodating. I try to listen to him. But then when it comes down to you giving them, you're refuting what they're saying, they butt in and try to change the topic. So in other words, I'm showing him that the only country that had gas chambers was the United States. And then that's it. Nobody else had gas chambers in Europe. All right? And so, you know, I'm trying to explain them. But then I said to them, look, I'll tell you what. I'll give you $1,000 if you could show me a picture of a real homicidal gas chamber like the ones that were in the United States. Because those are the only gas chambers that ever existed. If you could show me one of those gas chambers in Europe, in Germany, anywhere, I don't care. I will give you $1,000. And then you're going to have to explain to me how it was used to kill these people. Because anybody can show you any picture and just say, oh, this is the one. But, okay, well, show me where and how this worked, mm-hmm. who died in it. Yeah, I want to see. So he could not answer any of my questions. And then he started going, I mean, they go off, well, you know, my mother said this happened and my father did this and I lost all my relatives, blah, 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 blah. And they just, in other words, he wouldn't stick to one topic. And I try to stick him to one topic and he wouldn't. And then he go, oh, Mengele, you know, there's Mengele. And, oh, no, now he's bringing in Mengele. I mean, there's just no end to the nonsense with these people.
But the funny thing is he doesn't have his facts straight. I came in a part where he was talking about the Russians invading Austria in 1942. Well, I looked it up. I said, first of all, the Russians were busy with the Germans back in the Soviet Union. And they hadn't made any progress. So I looked it up, and it was called basically like Operation Vienna, but it wasn't that the Russians didn't call it that. 1945, in late spring of 1945. Actually late part of the winter. And so it was called Operation Vienna, and where they came in. And of course, they were in Hungary in 1944. And so there wasn't any, he had his facts all wrong. But people don't question him, because all you have to do is say, wait a minute. I think the Russians were preoccupied at the time in the Russian front with the Germans. They weren't interested in invading or advancing at this point, and they weren't.
Yeah. But it's just, you know, I've never had a Jew call me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was looking forward to the discussion. But the thing is, as I started refuting him, showing him he's wrong, he ends up getting out of the, you know, hanging up or whatever. He didn't want to continue the conversation.
This is how it is all the time
when I have discussion with Jews, because they don't know what they're talking about.
That's right.
And they're just telling you what a family member said, or someone said this and someone said that. And it's like, and I was trying to nail the guy down, because I'm trying to say to you, how did these people die? There were no gas chambers. So how did they die? Mm-hmm. How were they killed? And again,
he'd never answer that question.
No, no. So the really good one was when he goes, well, they were throwing the people alive into the ovens. I say, what? What are you talking about? A crematory, you put a dead body in the crematory. You don't put live people in a crematory.
The opening isn't large enough for a person who's flailing around then.
Yeah, I mean,
for one thing.
This is it's just incredible nonsense that they believe, and they all believe this stuff. And this is so hard for us to have conversations with these people because, first of all, they're not going to stay on topic. They're not going to let you finish off the topic because they're going to go to something else because, oh, I get this one. Oh, I got that to say. And everything they're saying is just bullshit. And what do you do? How do you win a conversation with a knucklehead? You can't.
No.
You don't win a conversation with a knucklehead. So anyway, that was my first time someone called me that was Jewish.
Like that.
And, I thought, oh, this will be a good conversation. But, oh, boy, it wasn't a good conversation. We must have talked about 15 minutes.
Right? I thought it was longer than that. But
well,
good for you.
I can look it up. I can look it up on the phone. But anyway, I could not break this guy down to accept anything, even the $1,000. I would have offered the reward of $1,000 if you could show me a picture of a real bona fide, usable gas chamber that was used in one of these camps. So anyway, that was that. And if anybody calls me again, we'll see how that goes. I'm always willing to take calls, folks. But I don't usually get calls from Jewish people that are kind of into this like they are. They don't usually call me.
They don't usually give you an audience, yeah.
All righty. Well, we got Henry with us. Hi, Henry. How's it going?
Good evening, guys. How are you guys doing?
Good. Thank you.
Good. I was listening to Jim talking when he was talking about that Jewish guy. And I don't know if you guys are aware, but there's a booklet called – see if I can hold this up for the. It's called the Hasbara Handbook.
Oh.
And it teaches Jewish students how to advocate for Israel. But of course, it applies to the Holocaust too. And there's a chapter here that teaches some techniques. And here's one that says this is what this guy was following.
Yeah.
When not to engage, and the first answer is when you don't know enough.
That's going to end real fast.
So the person that you were talking to has memorized his Hasbara handbook. Hasbara is a Hebrew word that means propaganda.
Oh, really?
So they have to propagandize to push for the state of Israel, to advocate for the state of Israel. That's what the book is all about. But the techniques are there, whether the topic is Israel, whether the topic is Jews in the slave trade, like it was for Tony Martin, mm-hmm. And whether it was for Jim Rizzoli defending his stance on the Holocaust. And I'm going to sneeze pretty soon here, so I hope
you can feel it coming, huh?
Yeah, but maybe I can shed it.
Okay.
The report from today.
Yes, sir.
There it is. The Heart of Deception. I use is Hasbara. Right. Hasbara is a famous word. There's a little parking spot war that we are having with a couple of ladies that attend the synagogue. This is being petty on steroids. But I like to park my car in the first spot facing the road, see the Lexco Brandon sign. Just to the left of that is a couple of parking spaces. And I try to take the first one so I can put my sign in my windshield. That's another one of my signs. Well, these ladies come very early, and they hog my spot. So I, to get to where I can drop off my equipment, the chairs that we use, the signs that we use, the American flags. I pull up in front of her, which is it's like no parking here to corner, and that's where my car is. Mm-hmm. It's a Mini Cooper, so it's a tiny little thing.
It fits in my purse. Yeah, I see.
I have it packed full of signs, and and I'm there, and I'm unloading the chairs, and I'm loading the signs and the flags, and she's out there taking a photograph of my car that's parked illegally. And we point out that the car is actually not parked. It's standing. There's another definition. There's parking, standing, and stopping. you know, and I think they all each have different definitions, but my engine was running, and so it was standing.
Yes.
Anyhow, she goes back, and then a police car appears and pulls into the parking lot and stays there the entire time we were there. And I had gone up. I can't go up to the guy because that would be trespassing or standing on synagogue property. So from the sidewalk, I said, "Officer, is there a problem?" And he said, "No, but he's going to stay there." It was a very crowded day. There, about 100 yards from the building that we protest in front of, is yet another building that another denomination of Jewish faith called Reconstructionist, and they meet there sometimes. And, of course, they had to hire their own security guard. So we have that security guard at the other building, the two security guards at our building, and now a police car to observe us all day long. And when if you ask the cop if there's a problem, he says no problem. So I thought that was pretty interesting. And then we were greeted by a black guy who's up there, and he's taking photographs of all of our signs. And at that point, I was across the street, across the busy street that you can see there. And does Diana have this all queued up? It's not too long. It's a minute and a half.
Does look like it.
Yeah. So play this, and then we'll talk about it, if that's okay with you guys.
Yeah, this is great. Yeah.
Hi there. How are you? What's your name? I know you, don't I?
I'll take his.
If you know anybody from the IBF.
What's IBF?
International Black Fighters.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Seoul.
No. You don't know us.
No. Guess I don't. No. Do you have a question for us?
No.
No?
No.
What's your position?
Hmm? I report back to the boss.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
What are you going to report?
Hmm?
What are you going to report?
Yeah, well, we just kind of gather information.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And where are you located?
We got offices in Los Angeles, Watts, you know?
Yeah.
Chicago.
Mm-hmm. We support.
You know the BGDs?
We support the black
You know the BGDs?
Mm-mm.
Black Gangster Disciples?
No. Motorcycle group?
Oh, brother. You're way off, but I see you recording me right now.
I am.
Mm-hmm. So, anyways.
Was he afraid because you were recording him?
Well, given the size difference between him and me, I was the one that was.
Yeah, I was thinking you.
And he's talking about the black fighter group and black gangster disciples. And I did a little Google searching on that, which of course you don't get exactly the right thing, but there's some black gangster disciples from gangs that were formed in Chicago, and they have the word God, and the O is replaced with a Jewish star.
Oh, come on.
It's just, I don't know if I can find that for you if you just Google black gangster disciple nation, you might come to that Wikipedia entry.
How's that?
That's BGD. That's close. Those are images. If you go to Wikipedia and maybe find it, but there it is. Black gangster disciples.
Wow. So they must be Zionists, right? What do you think?
Well, I have no clue. I did send that video that you guys just watched to my attorney because I did feel intimidated. I mean,
yeah, I bet you did.
He didn't do anything illegal, to his credit. I mean,
threatening. He wasn't threatening either.
No, he didn't say anything threatening or anything like that. You know, these are the things that we I wouldn't say routinely encounter, but we encounter people every now and then. And this is what I report to you guys about. Mm-hmm. You know, when I get around to writing a vigil report, I'll certainly include these videos. Another video that I'm still working on right now was there was about a half a dozen of high school kids, young men, boys, jogging. And two of them came and they spoke with us, and I'll have that video up soon, maybe for next week's talk or something like that. But cool. But you know, they strongly objected to our words using the J word. They, you know, because we say Jews bomb hospitals, right. They say, oh, that could offend some people, you know. And it's just like, and I said, what? But it's the truth. If you know, you don't think that the pilots dropping the bombs were Jews. I think they were. You don't get into the IDF if you're not.
IDF.
And you're not going to be, and you're not even going to be a Christian Zionist if you're, you know, to be in the IDF and flying jets. You know, they're not going to let those people have it or any other religion. So Jews bomb hospitals is the truth. And he said, that might put people in danger. And I say, well, if the truth puts people in danger, why is that my problem? Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm going to speak the truth, and of course, this is what the hoax is all about, right? Mm-hmm. People that speak the truth offend a powerful minority, and that powerful minority can put you in jail.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's coming, you know, with the new Anti-Semitism Awareness Act or something like that was just passed last week. Is that right?
Well, it was. Yeah, the act, it's gone through the House. I'm not sure if it's passed through the Senate yet. I haven't checked. I probably should to see what its progress is.
I'm as guilty as you are, Diane. I don't know. And you know, that's makes me wonder that if we were taken to court in this day and age with all this, you know, false claims of anti-Semitism on campuses. Yep. Mm-hmm. Would we have been as successful as we were in defending our right to free speech?
It hasn't gone even, as far as I know, hasn't even gone to the House yet.
Okay.
According to the update. So it's still, not the House, hasn't gone to the Senate.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it hasn't gone to the Senate.
I just checked on the progress. It's still, I don't know why it's still there, but
you know,
I thought it passed the House.
Sleepy Joe is there with his pen ready to sign it if the Senate does pass it. So, you know, things may change. Things may stay the same. I don't know exactly what's going to happen.
Right.
But we just continue to do our thing. So let's see. I'm trying to get my scorecard here. How I covered. There's only one other point that I wanted to talk about. And I don't know if I already have talked about it. So if you, if I am repeating myself, just slap me.
We'll probably indulge you. It's probably okay.
I have a, we're getting all to be about the same age here. I have a high school class that's having a reunion this year, our 60th reunion. And, one of the they were mostly Jews in the high school that I went to.
Wow.
And so one of the ladies, from our class said, oh, you got to read this book. Let me do this book recommendation. And the book is called How to Fight Anti-Semitism by Barry Weiss. And Barry Weiss, I guess, was a former editor at the New York Times, an op-ed editor or something like that. But, you know, and I wrote back I told her I was going to get the book from the library. I was hoping that there was going to be some reference to a guy named Israel Shahak. I don't know if you guys know that person.
He probably wouldn't be one of their favorites, as far as I know.
No, right. He, you know, I mean,
Weiss.
David Duke,
Weiss.
Weiss, W-E-I-S-S.
S-S, yeah.
And B-A-R-I. It's a woman, a gay woman who has a female husband, of course. And
Israel Shahak wrote the 13 Tribes, right?
Yeah. David Duke dedicated his book to Israel Shahak. So Israel was one of the good Jews that could see that if you're going to fight anti-Semitism, you have to fight Jewish chauvinism at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so I made a comment. I said, I hope that she talks about that. And I went and I got the book, and I read it very quickly, and I could see from all the BS that she was slinging that it wasn't going to be any, there was going to be no self-reflection. There was not going to be any Jewish group reflection. There was not going to be, you know, how can this anti-Semitism just happen? Because the goyim just breathe it in the air and it gets contagious like any other disease. And it's, you know, and so, yes, Barry Weiss, B-A-R-I. And so, you know, I wrote back and I said, you know, you're right. The book reads very quickly. She's a fast paced writer. I said, she's like Debbie Lipstadt on steroids. I said, but she commits the same faults that Lipstadt does, is in that she deals in misinformation, like that Israel's a democracy, and disinformation, like Leo Frank was found guilty only because the South was anti-Semitic, and ad hominem. I mean, she calls Jeremy Corbyn from England an anti-Semite. Jeremy Corbyn's the furthest thing from an anti-Semite that you could ever imagine. And so I said, you know, the book made me sad. And the lady Joyce, who promoted the book, said, you know, some little snide, why am I not surprised that this comment came from you, Henry? You know, it's just like that's how they argue. It's a Hasbara handbook again. You go to the person, you don't go to the argument. Mm-hmm. You know, she didn't challenge any of the three things I said about mm-hmm. Leo Frank and about democracy. Yeah. You know, she just said, oh, you're the class weirdo now.
Attack you, yes.
And so, yeah, so I'm not surprised that you would say something as ridiculous as you have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I leave it, but I'll keep it in mind.
Well, that's interesting because as far as I understand the Leo Frank case, he was judged by his peers, and there were five Jews in a jury.
Yes. So,
and they were furious that he might even be allowed to.
What's wrong with these people? I mean,
yeah.
I know they're trying to use the Leo Frank case. They're bringing it back now. Again, remember, the guy was found guilty. He was supposed to be executed, but they didn't execute him, and they threw him in jail. He was going to be in prison for life. I'm not really sure. I think so. But anyway, they weren't happy with that, and the people got mad, and they hung them. But the Jews today are using that as anti-Semitism. It's like, no, you don't get it. You know, what he did, he actually embarrassed the Jews.
Yeah.
And this is why they hang them out to dry.
Literally.
They really, that's what happened with him. You know, they hung him out to dry and said, get the hell away from us, you pervert.
You pervert. You've obviously been found guilty. Yeah. And you're going to be a life in prison, and they couldn't handle it. The people, I don't know, it was the town, they couldn't handle having this person alive for the crimes he committed.
Well, not only that, they knew that the governor was part of the gang, right, that was going, yes, to, you know, he was going to get released.
Oh my!
And so the men called Friends of Mary Fagan, the 13 years old, raped, yeah, and murdered. Yeah. You know, but of course that was 1913, and that was the year the ADL was created based, right, on the falsification of that, right, story. Mm-hmm. So we have, again, lies upon lies upon lies, and who's surprised if you're paying attention? Unfortunately, there's only, you know, four people here in the world that are paying, right, attention, you know, yeah, and we're small indeed. But.
Yeah. You know what's sad about that case? That, again, people just, you know, this would have been a good thing to talk to that black guy about, that Leo Frank was trying to, put the blame on the black guy. He was trying to say the black guy, I forgot the guy's name, Jim something, I can't remember.
Jim Connolly, but first it was Newt Lee, the Night Watchman. He tried to blame the Night Watchman, right? And then yeah, Jim Connolly, yeah, his own man, right? And he just threw him under the bus. So
you know. Imagine he's trying to scapegoat, you know, the blacks, and the black people today don't even know that happened, right? They don't pay attention.
Right.
It's like you know, when these Jews start touting that case out to try to say anti-Semitism, it's like anti-Semitism. How about, you know, racism?
Yeah.
All right. He's trying to put the blame on the black.
That's
the
right.
Black guy.
Jim, they play it backwards. They play it that, you know, you know, the whites, the big bad whitey, will hang blacks and will hang Jews as well. You know, so that's how they tilt the truth. But the ADL was created on that, mm-hmm, and today it's as it's as strong as you know, it couldn't be stronger. Yeah. So like that's what, you know, that's my report for today. I think that that's,
yeah. Well, that's, I got one more question for you, Henry. Is this woman going to do that with this pocket thing from now on? Is that what's going to happen from now on? She's going to start taking space?
She'll take the space. And what I do is I just put up more signs on trees right in front of her car. You know, she's not going to win this game. You know, I'm so petty. My friends call me Richard, you know, only a few people get that joke, but
I get it. I've known a lot of people who are race car fans. So,
that's what's happening here in the woke capital of the world. I showed you the picture of the tampon dispenser in the men's room. Last week. And like I say, I'll try to get the conversation with these kids who didn't know. I mean, he was 17 years old. I've been out there for 20 years. And I said, how old were you when I started? He said, -3.
Yeah, exactly.
Diane, did you want to talk to Henry? Did you say you were going out there?
I was going to let him know. And I was planning to, when I go visit my daughter, and I've already talked to her, and she's talked about possibly, you know, meeting halfway. I guess she's been to Ann Arbor before, but in that particular, and I'm planning to stay an extra day with her, so she doesn't feel, you know, cheated in that regard. And I was going to get with you about the details, and possibly her communicating with you about travel arrangements and meeting up and so on.
Well, that would be great. So you're coming to Ann Arbor?
Oh, not specifically, not well, unless that we can have an arrangement, but I'll be coming to essentially Ohio.
Okay.
Up city? Northern.
Northern Ohio. Toledo's 45 miles away.
So just saying.
I can come down, pick you up, bring you up, have you stand vigil with us, and take you back.
I mean, I told Diane I would love to see her do that with her camera. She could record it and get it all, then I can make a video of it. But that would be fun, I think.
Well, Henry had done this, had arranged this, possible that your videographer could, you know, take the pictures and then we put it up on BitChute. Well,
Henry's the videographer.
Yeah, I just wear my GoPro.
Then that's perfect. Yeah, that's perfect then, because my cell phone doesn't go that long for videos.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
nice. All right, well, that would be fun if that could happen. I'd like to see that.
Yeah, yeah.
So it would be great fun.
You could look forward to
it. I would look forward to it.
Okay. All right.
I guess so.
Okay, Henry, right. Well, thank you for being on, and we appreciate that next week. Hopefully we'll hear from you again on this, okay?
All right, everybody stay healthy until then.
You too.
Bye-bye.
See you, Henry. All
hey,
right,
Uncle Henry. Hey, Uncle Murray. Uncle Henry, yeah.
Hey,
well.
Guys.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm just telling people, you know, if you – I love when people, they talk about this or talk about that, about Jews, about this, and they never, ever had confrontations with them. They've never spoken with them.
Yeah.
They've never been in their presence to see how they do things and how they talk and how they treat you. I mean, you know, it's just like me with the illegal immigrants.
Yeah.
Everybody talks about illegal immigrants and this or that. Look, I've been with them. I've been in the middle of them. I've worked with them. You know, so when people tell me, oh, you don't know anything about illegal immigrants or this or that.
Oh, my gosh.
Because you couldn't get anybody as close. I mean, I was my friend Rick, who's dead. He died a couple of years back. And he worked. He hired them. He brought them into the country. In fact, he had his first girlfriend, he had two kids through, all right? And they weren't married, but anyway. And then she got away from her. She got away from him. I don't know what happened there. But anyway, then the next woman he shacked up with, another Brazilian, that I was actually with him the day he stalked her. Can you imagine? Yeah, he stalked her in the mall. I was with him. You know, we're just in the mall, and I really saw a predator. Rick was a predator.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw how he worked, you know. Again, I didn't know really what was going on. I was just with them, and I noticed he's looking at this girl. She was kind of attractive. I don't know. But, I mean, And so he's looking at her, and then he's, you know, walking, and he's falling. You could tell he's looking, and then he ends up walking into the same store she was, and he ends up just being where she was. You know what I mean? I mean, he was talking to her.
That's right.
And,
that's exactly right.
So anyway, he hooks up with her, you know, eventually, and she ends up having a kid, his kid. And again, another fiasco, because the first woman that he had relations with had two kids, and he had she wouldn't let him get near the kids and blah blah blah. I mean, it's just a typical woman fighting a man over kids. Horrible. He spent thousands upon thousands of dollars trying to get those kids or whatever. Should have just left it alone, but he didn't. See, I'm trying to tell these guys that have problem with women, with kids, all right? You got to do what my brother Joe did. My brother Joe handled it pretty well. He just walked away, and he let her take the kid. He didn't try going after the kid. He didn't do nothing. He let her take the kid, okay? And then he would see the, you know, Rachel on the weekends or whenever, however they arranged it. He didn't have to spend any money in court, try to fight. He just said, look, whenever you want her around me, and I'll be there for her. And he was. He took care of her when she was there. And it was really a good relationship. Whereas these guys today, oh, my goodness, they fight and fight over getting their kid. And you're not going to win. I'm just telling you, you're not going to win. Because the whole system is geared to giving the kids to the woman, especially if it's an illegal immigrant woman now. All right, and you're going to spend thousands of dollars. The best way, you walk away from it. You don't walk away from your kid, but you do whatever you can when the kid's available. She'll make it so that kid will come see you, because it's going to get to a point that the woman's going to say, well, gee, he's not fighting over this kid. He's not doing this. He's not doing that. But, you know, he's being nice. Mm-hmm. He's being nice about this. And, well, anyway, I just thought I'd bring that in there, because people just don't understand, you know, the Jews, illegal immigrants. They've never been around them. They've never seen how they work and talk and, you know, do all the things they do. I mean, it's just horrible. It really is horrible. But anyway, that's the scoop on that one. Okay, Miss Diane, do you have something to say?
No. I guess we maybe could do our commercial, and then we can go to the next segment if you wanted to do that.
Well, I suppose we can. Okay. Yes.
It's a natural break.
Well, that's fine. We're up to the top, almost the top of the hour anyway. Okay, let's get into Money Tree Publishing. Well, Speak Free Radio, first of all, obviously, here's where we're having our show. We appreciate that we can be on this platform to do our thing here. And, again, it is a two-hour show, and it's been great so far. I've been enjoying it. And Dave Gaheri, thank you very much for that. And let's get into the Money Tree Publishing, because that's the publishing arm of you know, this whole thing, really. If you want to get some really good books, that's where you want to get them, Money Tree Publishing. And here they are. There's a 6 Million Factor Fiction. Go to the shop, and there's all the books there with the DVDs, too. So you get plenty of good books. In fact, I try to send people to the site when they ask about the myth of German villainy or whatever. I say, here's the books you want to have. Go here. You know, you get 10% off if you say order with code HOAX in it. And whatever. But, you know, I don't even care about discounts with these guys. I look at it as a contribution to help the cause. If it helps these people out, buy the books from the people. It's going to help out. And, again, they got the DVDs, beautiful DVDs, Communism by the Back Door, Greatest Story Never Told, the Messianic information there. I mean, they got the best. They got the best stuff there. So I encourage you to go there. And, again, you're supporting people that are on our side. All right, that's the most important part to that. MoneyTreePublishing.com. That's the site. Hopefully you can take a look at that. Okay, we're going to get into another phase. I want to talk about this. Maybe Diana could jump in if she
wants. I hope so. That's really important.
Well, this is because, you know, Henry's a good example of what's going on here.
Yes.
I want people to understand what Henry's doing in the ramifications and what's probably going to happen eventually with all people like us that protest. Mm-hmm. And I think this is very important that people understand it. Now, Ryan Massano, mm-hmm. I'm wondering if we can bring that video in. I would like to bring that video and actually play that video.
Did the last one you put in, up?
No, the one he was at the city council meeting that he actually spoke. I want to see if we can bring that in.
Is it the link with the video that you just put up?
Well, it's on my BitChute channel. Just you got to scroll down probably 2 weeks.
Two weeks. Okay.
Okay, you got to scroll down, and you're going to see Ryan Massano. It's a short video, 2 minutes. And I want to show people what Ryan Massano, how he acts. Beautiful. All right, yeah. Beautiful. He's all dressed up, hat. I mean, you know, very respectable of going to the city council meeting because we're going to tie it in something later. Okay? Yeah. So watch what he said at this meeting because this started the whole thing.
Right. Esteemed listeners and honored guests, my name is Ryan Massano. Today I stand before you on the soil of the greatest nation ever conceived in the minds of the wisest and most virtuous men in world history on a matter of profound importance and concern to us all. The agenda I am about to expose may well prove to be the gravest threat ever posed to America because it seeks to undermine the very foundation upon which this nation is based. The Talmudic Jewish community in their perennial war on God, their relentless pursuit of power and world dominance, has conceived a sinister plot to aggressively promote sexual depravity like pornography, homosexuality, birth control, abortion, and transgenderism. In all forms of sexual degeneracy in America, their influence extends far beyond politics, though. Jew Vision and Hollyweird have become nothing more than a degenerate propaganda machine, churning out filth designed specifically to target young, impressionable minds across this great nation. Yes, indeed, I am speaking about the devil worship Jewish menace. For centuries, they have waged a silent war against Christianity and all that it stands for. They hate us because we love the creator of the heavens and the earth, and because we are followers of Jesus Christ, the one true begotten Son of God who came down from heaven to save us from eternal damnation. And they hate America because it was founded upon Christian principles, principles that threaten their diabolical Jewish agenda of world domination. Let us also address the elephant in the room. The Federal Reserve Bank is not a federal at all. It is a private institution owned by international bankers, many of whom happen to be Jewish. They're hissing me as they hissed 2,000 years ago. Pulling strings behind closed doors with the three threads of the Jewish usurers, money printing, interest, and the cursed 1913 16th Amendment income tax. It is impossible to prove these assertions in 2 minutes, so to the brave men and women with courage to pursue and defend truth, my website is MassanoNews.com. My radio show on Speak Free Radio is the Ryan Massano Show from 2 to 4 p.m. on Saturday. Thank you very much. Have a good night.
Thank you, Ryan.
Welcome. Boy, that was beautiful. I mean, how can you say there was anything wrong with what he said in 2 minutes?
His content.
Yeah, he summed it up in 2 minutes. Now, remember, he's respectful.
Yeah.
He's getting right to the point. He does not waste on people's time. He mentioned that people were hissing at him, especially the Jews that were on the city council. They weren't happy about it. And so that's the way you really want to go to a city council meeting. And you want to present your information like that. And that was really good. Now, what's the problem here?
Content.
what's the problem? Well, I like to maybe get the other video, the one that he got arrested, folks. And here's what happened. All right. What happened? Or somebody at that city council meeting, one of the city councils, they said that they brought a suit, not a suit.
Restraining order.
Restraining order. They hit him with a restraining order. And why did they hit him with a restraining order? Because they said they felt threatened by him. Now, you heard what he said.
They felt threatened by him.
Talking about what he was talking about. Words, folks. That's all it was. Okay, so now.
Truth.
This is probably what happened here. I'm just surmising because I don't know if this was the next week or whatever. But, well, he's dressed up still the way he was dressed, right? So I'm not sure if he was going to go back. I don't know. I just thought it don't matter. The point is he gets arrested because this woman hit him with a restraining order. Now, here's the deal with the restraining order. Restraining order doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's right or wrong. They don't care. But let's watch what happened to him here first, and then we'll get into the discussion. Okay, it's a real short, couple minute video here. He's gonna get arrested.
Welcome to America. You get arrested for your right to be.
Don't touch me.
Don't touch me.
I'm saying you're fine where you're at.
You touch me.
I just don't want you.
Can you admit that you touch me?
Of course I did.
Okay, so don't touch me next time.
I'm asking you not to get
don't touch me. Sure, just don't touch me.
Yeah, this is absolutely great. A complete attack on the free speech. Everybody, as a matter of fact, you guys are actually violating the Constitution.
It was crazy that Americans don't stand up to this. Americans don't stand up to this. This is insane.
Hey guys, this must have been another day, obviously, because he has different. I think he has a different tie on.
Different shirt color.
Yeah, different shirt. Yeah. So he must have went insane. Back. Okay.
All
so
because
he went back
of a city council member who lied on Ryan Massano and now arrested him for his free speech, and no American does anything about it because they're too cowards. They're all cowards. Even the police who took an oath to stand up for our Constitution, and they're arresting you for your free speech. That's insane. Our own police officers, who are supposed to protect the law.
Can you get my phone in there?
Is it next to me?
Can I get my keys?
Is it inside the chair?
Keys out of my pocket, because if you need to go home, I'm not going to have to come here for my
dress. Yeah, that's fine.
If you could take your all keys. Yeah. All of these? Yeah.
Can you imagine the police? You know, the police is just doing their job. Remember, he's got a restraining order on him. Illegal. It's an illegal, unconstitutional, whatever you want to say, restraining order. But it doesn't matter if it's a lie or not. They can lie and just say, I feel threatened. And this is the
I don't know how you guys can do this. We're supposed to protect the Constitution, but you guys don't do that. We're supposed to uphold the law of the Constitution. And yet you don't do that because a city council member lied.
Right.
About us on a subpoena.
So, anyway, so he's going to go to jail. Now.
It's pretty ridiculous, Jim. See, what they did was, they applied the restraining order to the city council building.
Right.
So him going to the city council building and speaking was threatening this Lane Milstein freak. That's the funny part.
Where he was being denied his redress under the guise of now trespassing, restraining order. And so they're coming in and dealing with the restraining order. And if it is criminal trespass. But they're ignoring and avoiding the issue of his free speech and his right to redress his government.
Right.
They completely bypassed that. That's yep. what we're here. Even
they
though
were
we
able
know,
to. That's
even
right.
Even though we know that's the issue. Okay?
That's right. That's
so
right.
So this is what's going to happen on this situation. Now, I don't know if Diana wants to come and talk about it from her end.
For her experience with this type of thing, it would be most helpful if she would. Good to see you.
Yeah, almost. You can't really see me, though, can you?
No, but we can hear you. And that's just, Jim always says that the audio is the most important.
So, I can see you, Diana. Hello, Uncle Murray. So, Jim, one of the things that I agree with you, I don't usually agree with you, but when it comes to fathers, divorces and custody battles, so whether or not you were actually married and then you're having, so you might not have gotten married, but you have children with a woman, okay? And what Jim said regarding what Joe did not fighting in terms of the custody for the kid, that really is a good idea. And let me tell you, Jim, it's not thousands of dollars. It's tens and tens and tens.
Oh, no, I know
tens.
That. My friend spent $200,000 or $300,000.
Oh,
yes.
My God.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
So if honestly, if you're a man and that happens to you, or if you're a woman and it happens to you, because sometimes it does happen where, the man is doing something. I know that tensions are high when this is happening, you break up with somebody, but really step back. tell the judge whatever the judge does, whatever the judge, don't even get into the courtroom. If just say, okay, I agree, whatever you want, and don't fight it. Because if you fight it, the more you fight it,
yeah, you're right.
The more, not only will you be paying court costs, but it you can get, you know, restraining orders against you. It's a way for it is in a way an opportunity for lawyers and the courts to make money. So just you know, tell your kid or kids, I love you, and you know, try to work this out with mommy or daddy, and just let the other person set the tone in terms of the schedule, and just go with the flow. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Okay, regarding, I just want to check the chat. Okay, regarding restraining orders, I can only speak about what happens in Massachusetts, okay? So in Massachusetts, they have two ways that you can get, let's just call it, you have one that's a restraining order, and that is something that you get against a person with whom you've had a relationship. So husband, wife, brother, sister, mother, child, okay? In Massachusetts, they also have something called a harassment protection order. So a restraining order is something where you really know the person. The harassment protection order is something in Massachusetts where the person would have to do something to you three times that make you fear for your life. So what they do is they go to court, they fill out a piece of paper and they write the three times and they you know, write up this whole sob story, whatever. Sometimes it's legitimate. I know when in my Trump days, I had somebody stalking me unmercifully, and I could not get they hated me so much they would not give me a protection order against this guy. But anyway, so it looks like Ryan had a temporary restraining order against him. So what happens is I go to court, I fill out the paperwork, whether it's for a restraining order with somebody I know or had a relationship with, or a harassment protection order, somebody I don't really have a relationship with, you know, somebody that might be just, you know, they saw Jim, that guy from California, and he keeps calling Jim and then he starts threatening him. Right? Something like that. Okay. So you present the paperwork, you fill it out, you bring it to court, to the clerk or somebody, you know, somebody in the office part of the court. They set up a time for you to have a hearing before a judge. Typically in Massachusetts, what they do is they give you what's called a temporary restraining order or harassment protection order from the time that you file it to the time it gets heard before the judge. Okay. So it's usually a 10-day period. It could be a little longer. So it looks like Ryan was served with the temporary restraining order, and he was in California, mm-hmm. I think, Uncle Murray. So yeah. When he was served with it initially, he was likely told that you can't do anything, like you can't go near this person until you go before the judge. So if he went near the person between that 10-day period when it was only temporary, they can turn around and arrest you and say that you violated the order. Okay? So now let's just say you go before the judge, your 10 days is passed, because they need time to be able to get both parties into court. Okay, so now you get before the judge and you make your case for whether or not the judge should issue, whether it's a restraining order or a temporary harassment protection order in Massachusetts. So if the judge says, yes, we're issuing it, the judge could say it's good for 6 months, it's good for a year, not usually more than a year in Massachusetts. If the judge could also say, no, I'm not issuing it. And then it's gone. But it looks like in Ryan's case that he had a temporary. And that's what happened. And I can't even go into it because I'm still on, I think I'm on pretrial probation for something that happened to me. And I can't talk about it. I will. They will arrest me and they will put me in jail. So I probably still have another 200 plus days, but it was something almost identical to what happened to Ryan. Literally, it's almost identical. So that's how they get you. That's how they get you. So for Ryan, it looks like he did, listen, allegedly what they have him for is violating a temporary restraining order. And now, so in, when it's just a restraining order, it's typically civil. Once you violate it, right, whether it's in that 10-day period when it's temporary or after the judge issues it for, say, a six-month period or for a period of a year, once you, if you violate that, it becomes criminal. Okay, it becomes a criminal matter. And then if you're found guilty of it, right, it's on your record. All kinds of things can happen to you in Massachusetts. In Massachusetts, if you have a restraining order against you and you have a license to carry, if it's just issued against you, right? So the judge issues it, they'll pull your license to carry. So they're going after him. It looks like they're going after Ryan big time.
And the thing is, this has nothing to do with free speech. Nothing. It's just their law and the protocol and how it's all followed to the T. And they're more concerned with how it's followed. Okay? And well, that's how mean? They're getting.
What they're doing is, and the thing that people don't understand and I didn't understand is the power that these people have, that they can even get a temporary restraining order or a temporary harassment protection order against you. That's the incredible power that these people have that most people don't realize happens, right?
Right.
So they have the power to go before a judge and file paper. Well, actually, no, they didn't go before the judge yet if it's temporary, to file that paperwork, and they know what to do to get you to shut up. So if Ryan keeps violating it, he will be locked up. So
the best way to get around that is for a friend of mine to go and see exactly what Ryan says, but do it en masse. They can't arrest all of them. That's one way to do it.
Well, here, let me tell you what they'll do. Okay, so I'm just telling you my experience in Massachusetts. Okay, when the mayor of Boston, Michelle Wu. Remember, Michelle Wu is, a graduate of Harvard. She's an attorney. I believe she's an attorney. She was also somebody that was employed by Boston Consulting Group, which is a front group, a global front group for the Rothschild banking cartel. So she's mayor of Boston, and she put forth a vaccine mandate. Do you guys remember this for Boston?
Mm-hmm.
That if you were in Boston and you went into certain businesses, you had to have proof that you took a COVID shot. Okay. So what happened is people started protesting in front of her house, right? Yeah. So the time of day in Boston when you can protest or you could start doing that is 7 a.m. So they were protesting relentlessly in front of her house. So what do you think happened? What do you think Mayor Wu did, Uncle Murray, to your point about people coming out en masse? What do you think they did?
Oh, they found a way to change the time.
Yeah, so they brought forth something in the city council in Boston, and this happened in real life. Look it up. I watched it happen. They created an ordinance that said that you could not begin protesting before 9 a.m., okay, there was a state rep happened to be Jewish in the south of Boston. After we were protesting in front of governors, he was putting forth a bill that you could not protest within 100 yards of a public official's house. That's what they did, right? I don't know if that ever went through, but anyway, back to Michelle Wu. So people started going to her house before the 9 o'clock, and what do you think they did? They arrested them.
They dragged them away. Of course they did.
They arrested them. And then after they get arrested multiple times, they said, oh, well, they shouldn't have been arrested. It should have just been a citation. But that's how they broke up what was happening in front of the Michelle Wu's house. And they did it. People were going there. Groups of people were going there. And that's how they got it to stop. And then these same people were protesting at City Hall in Boston. They got arrested. They went to the State House, these same group of people. What happened to them? They got arrested. And eventually, all of this protesting stopped. This happened in real life. Go look it up in the last 3 years. People got arrested over and over again. Then the charges against these people, resisting arrest, assaulting a police officer, right? The charges start to ramp up. So I know Jim wanted me to talk about this. So I'm just trying to enlighten people in terms of what is actually going on.
Well, what's going to happen? And the thing, one thing you didn't mention, the people, you got to understand why Michelle Wu got so upset. Because she had to confront them when she went to work. Okay? They're in front of her house, and she has to get out of there to go to work. And they were yelling and screaming at her. And she claimed that it was really upsetting her, causing her anxiety.
It was. No, and I can tell you, I have it on good sources within the emergency services of Boston, that they took her away in an ambulance at least four times with panic attacks. But remember, here's what people don't know. If you look at Boston Consulting Group, they literally put forth like a 79 or 89 page plan for what they're going to do for Boston for like Agenda 2030. So it wasn't Michelle. It was somebody else up high above her, pulling the strings and making it happen in City Hall that they could pass this ordinance. So back to what we talked about last week, Jim, when we talked about, we talked about free speech and, yeah, you know, they can't stop you when you have your rights. They do stop you, right? I told you the story of me. The more I spoke out, I got sued from two people in the Republican Party for $25,000 each, right? That's how they start. I had a little political group for Trump. They filed complaints with the FEC against me. I was getting calls from the IRS in Boston. I was arrested. I had my last trial that was in, I think, January or February of this year. So they just keep up in the ante for what they'll do against you. They'll do something to get your driver's license taken away. They'll do something to get your kids taken away, or at least at the very least have the Department of Children and Families investigate you. It is, people don't realize how bad it already is. It's already that bad.
Right. Well, the problem is that sunlight needs to be applied to all this, because they can't do any of that in clear day. All that stuff has to be done under cover of darkness.
Right, but Uncle Murray, they've done it. I'm thinking of some of the protesters that I went to Michelle Wu's house on, I don't know, four or five occasions protesting. But some of those people, when they got arrested, how they got aggressively manhandled by the police, horrible what they did to these people. These people were warriors going to the State House, going to City Hall. And eventually, how many court cases can you file? Because I was telling Jim this yesterday. So say you get charged with, they could turn one of these charges, let's say, for example, into a felony. Okay. Say now you get arrested in front of Michelle Wu's house, even though you haven't been maybe gone through the court process to get rid of that case. So then say you get arrested at the State House, say you get arrested, even if it's all false, they say disturbing the police, resisting arrest. What happens is at first you get released on personal recognizance. And then let's just say you get released, you've gotten arrested three times, they up it, you get released on bail, okay? At some point, depending on what the charges are, the judge could say to you, Not if you can get convicted, but if you get charged one more time, you're going to jail. So they can set you up to get charged, not convicted, not through the court process, but they can get you charged so that you will be put in jail. That's how they do it to you. And I know this because it happened to me. And like I said, there's a case that happened to me almost exactly with what's going on with Ryan Mastano. And it started 3 years in January of 21. And if I talk about it, I have another probably 200, more than 200 plus days. I will go to jail. I will go to jail, Uncle Murray. So what do you do? What do you do?
Someone else has to speak out for you so you don't have to, so they can't get you. That's
but
what
I
it
can't,
is.
I can't tell anybody to get them to speak. It's called, there's something called third party. I can't get somebody else to do it.
No, people should do it on their own volition is what I'm saying.
I know, but they don't. I can't talk about the case to anybody. So what are they going to talk about?
Well, they can observe and report what they see and say that, okay,
nobody.
I know.
Uncle Murray, when I went to trial, there was nobody there for me except for
my
lawyer.
That's the problem. That's
I was
the
by
problem.
Myself. Okay, but
that's the problem.
But.
No.
Right? But when you get targeted by the FBI as I was, then anybody around you, bad things will happen to them. I'm just telling you. I'm just telling you the way it is.
Well, you see, that's how gangsters work. And there's only one way to deal with gangsters. You gotta take out gangsters. You understand? You can't tolerate gangsters.
I know. Listen, Uncle Murray, I had three trials. I had four trials. One, I was the plaintiff, and the rest I was the defendant. All for my speaking out, plus lawsuits, plus all kinds of bad things. Just telling you.
I'm surprised. Yeah, I'm surprised that they didn't do this to you more when you were going to the city council meetings and the other meetings there too.
Well, because remember what happened in Revere. We were making a lot of progress at the Revere Human, what was it called? Human Rights Commission meetings.
Yeah, Human Rights.
And it would have gotten worse. But the reason I stopped going there is because people in my group, I didn't live in Revere, but there were people that I was helping in Revere, Mass. People in my group they underestimated how corrupt things were. I'm using corruption as right. So one person in particular went and decided that to get the problem to stop, they were going to have a conversation with one of the city councilors. And that's when I said, I'm out. I can't have people in my group thinking that I said, I said the city councils haven't stopped it in 15 years. You think they're going to stop it now? But Jim, here's what they did in Revere, though. Remember, it was in person. Remember, we used to go in person.
Yeah.
Then they moved it to Zoom.
Yeah.
And before they moved it to Zoom, they cordoned off. They started making new rules for how you could behave in city council chambers. The rules about if you were live streaming where you could sit. That's what they did. The more you pushed, the more they kept, right? So then if you didn't sit in the chairs that they wanted you to sit in, they would arrest you. That's how they do it. So the more you push back, they have an answer for everything. And those meetings, which would have had very few people in them had not we been there, they had more police there. They had lawyers from the city there. The police chief and the fire chief were both on the Human Rights Commission panel, right? I mean, but that's what they started doing there, and people would have started to get arrested.
Yeah.
That's how they do it.
Yeah, well, you know, you understand our infrastructure has been hijacked by the homosexual banking mafia.
listen, I get it. And I'm not telling people like Henry or Ryan Masato not to do what they're doing. I'm just telling you the reality. And I don't know who it was that was talking and filming when Ryan got arrested, but that must've been a friend of his.
Yeah.
I used to think that the police took an oath. The police have not taken an oath to uphold your rights.
Right.
Okay. That we, like people like us, we really have to unbrainwash ourselves, because these people, these police, who many of them had to take the COVID shot to keep their job. Think about it. You really think that they're not there to protect your rights. They're there to keep you and me and Jim and Diane and Henry from causing problems for the elite people, for the Jews. That's why they're there. That's what the police are. Right, they're managers. They're not there to support us. They right. don't take Certain an oath to support
slogan.
It's yeah. a lie. Yeah. It's that Hasbara stuff, whatever. Anyway, Jim, did you have any more questions?
Well, no. I mean, the thing is, I'm really curious. That's why I really would have liked to see Ryan come on tonight. Maybe we can get him on another time, but I really want to see, you know, what he perceives of what's going on. I wonder if he understands this, that this is how it works. You know what I mean?
He might, and the thing is, he might have been told he can't talk about it, right? Because if he brings up like the person's name or certain things, what they'll do is they'll say you violated it again. See, what happened in my situation, it was the same thing. It was a elected official. And the police for the town of the elected official, they were the ones that filed violations of a restraining order against me while it was in the temporary phase. Going all the way to trial. I'm just telling you.
Well, you know, right. Understand they operate by no rules. They don't have any rules that they recognize.
No, I get it. And the only reason I'm telling you this, anybody this, is it's very difficult and sad and depressing when you realize that you're outmanned and you're outgunned and you're outnumbered.
Yeah.
Except that we're not in reality. It's only because we adhere to this whole thing called law, right? This legal fallacy, you know? Because we
well, what are you
going to
do, Uncle Murray? If I'm in the clink, Uncle Murray, are you going to bake me a cake with a file in it?
I absolutely would. I hope you enjoy.
And I'm sure you would, and then you would be in the cell next to me, right? So that's the reality of it, and it. Jim, did you ask Ryan to be on the show?
Well, Diane sends him the link to the show all the time.
And I also sent him a kind of a personal invitation if he wanted to join us tonight. But I'm not sure where he is. And I'm not. Henry understands that every week he's to come on. Ryan may not, because he just had his show, presumably, 2 to 4 Pacific time, as I understand it, on Speak Free Radio. So who knows what happened, where he went.
Did he get arrested yesterday? No. When did he get arrested?
It was a couple of days ago. But he spent 14 hours on the floor of a cell.
Yeah. I didn't spend that much time in a jail cell, but I you know, maybe an hour and a half, I think I spent, but you know, that's a long time, 14 hours. That's so much power.
We screwed up their relationship. These people are functionaries. They're not supposed to tell us anything unless we ask them. They're not supposed to do anything but their bloody job. See, and we got it all backwards. That's how things have gone to this extreme.
Well, Uncle Murray, they are doing their job. The cops are doing their job. They are. We just think their job is different than it is.
Well,
they're doing their job.
Well, once again, that's the problem. This true. Yeah.
It's us. It's instead of, you know, so many reasons why we got to this place, but think about it. A lot of men, and I was guilty of watching sports a lot, but all the men are watching sports games and they're not out there fighting. They're not in the city halls. I'm not saying physically on the streets. I'm saying they're not in the city halls and town halls fighting. They're not. They're busy watching sports.
Right.
Or gambling or whatever, right? Right? And so we got ourselves into this place. And the only reason I'm telling people this is the reality of it. The reality of what's happening.
Yeah.
And reality sucks.
People don't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
Sure does.
Well, we'll have to see what happens with Ryan. Again, I don't know what's going on. And it's the same with anybody that's going out protesting, because again, now we know how they operate. I mean, and that's why I was thinking about Henry. I'm saying to myself, what are they going to do to him at some point? You know, how are they going to manipulate this to do that to him? You know what I mean?
Well, but Henry, the difference with Henry is Henry doesn't have a huge following. He's not live streaming, right? He said he has his GoPro on.
Yeah.
And there's only a couple people there. So Henry's not a threat to them. He's right. Not a threat. So right. When you have somebody, and I'm not bragging, I'm not, but at one point before I had at least 50,000 followers on Facebook and it was international, but I had live streams where I end up with, you know, a million views, half a million, whatever. So when you're reaching that many people, then you become a problem to them. Right. So Henry, he's been doing this for 20 years. Unless he got somebody down there to live stream for him on a big platform, and right. if they let them keep their platform up and he started doing something, but they're just going to let Henry do his thing. They're not going to arrest him. There's no reason to. Look, two people on the street.
Yeah.
Right? There's no reason to. He's not threatening to them at all. No, it's no offense to him. I think it's great what he's doing, but
yeah.
he's not a threat.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I get it. And it's just like me. People, they used to say to me, "Oh, aren't you worried about this?" And I said, "I'm not a threat to them. I'm who I. How many people watch my videos?" You know what I mean? We get 200 or 300 people watching our videos, and most of them are in Europe.
Right, you know? But it's different. It's different when you know before COVID. Let's say they took my Facebook page down in mid January of 2021. Right after January 6th, right after a lot of this stuff, they took my Facebook. They took it down. So they took it down shortly after. I don't know if you remember. I wish Henry were on right now. Because I don't think Henry understands how the police work. I think he still has that illusion that they're on our side. They're not on our side.
No.
The police, right? So after I live streamed, I was live streaming. I don't know if you saw that, Jim. It was I think it was January 2nd, 21, when I was in front of the governor's house and those two guys had me in a headlock for 8 minutes while like 30 state police watched, and it was live streamed. They had me in a headlock for 8 minutes. And it was shortly after that that they took my Facebook page down. So when you can, you know, and that reached a lot of people because people were calling the police department trying to get help. And that was in front of the police.
Oh no, I know how that works.
Right. So, you know, as Lisa said in the chat, they didn't protect their own bodies. They all took shots to keep their job. They're not going to protect yours.
Right. Huh.
So we have to stop thinking that really we have to accept, unfortunately, the situation that we're in. I'm not saying don't fight. I'm not saying that, but we have to accept it that it's not as simple as they charge you with, say, disturbing the peace. It doesn't end there if you keep fighting. If you stop fighting, then it ends there. But if you keep fighting and keep speaking out, it doesn't end. It does not end.
And it actually doesn't stop. It doesn't stop when you stop fighting either, because sometimes they'll just, out of spite, go after you because they got nothing better to do.
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, for me, when I stopped bucking the system, well, because I was involved in so many court cases and lawsuits that, you know, once you stop, if they ignore you, unless, you know, they do, they ignore you. You're, what, right? So anyway, that's the story. So somebody just came in the chat. I don't know if you want to add them in.
Yeah, let's take a look. Let me see what's going on.
Stormy.
All right. Stormy, would you like to come in and talk with us?
Well, I haven't heard your conversation, so I'm not sure where you're at, but I just I've seen online a lot of people are talking about this Zionism stuff. You know, their eyes are being opened up to this Zionism. It's not so much Jews, but Zionism is
Well, Zionism is only since 1897. So it's actually a bigger problem than that.
So, in Zionism, who are the Jews? If it isn't the Jews, who is it?
No, it is, but not all Jews. You guys say this whiteness, and I don't get that because I don't see colors in people, but it's like this Jewish Zionist white supremacy type of thing. You know, that we can do whatever we want. And that's what's happening.
It's not white supremacism. It's Jewish supremacism.
Stormy, let me ask you something. If I asked you this question, how would you answer it? Do you think all Jews are bad?
No.
Why not?
Well, because not all people are bad. I mean, they're...
Well, what do you consider bad?
Well, I guess it depends on how you look on... I consider all people children of God, and there is not going to be, if we believe that we are going to heaven or heaven here on earth, there will be no races, there will be no different colors.
The only ones who are children of God are those who believe in Jesus Christ. That's going to cut down the numbers considerably.
Right. It doesn't matter what skin color.
No, but not all people on the earth are children of God.
Yeah, see the story. The point is, if a person's a Jew and they don't convert to Christianity and accept Christ, then are they bad?
According to God, they are.
Well, that's not for me to judge. I don't judge.
Well, but I mean, what would you say? You don't have to name it. If the whole point is that a Jew, along with everybody else, it doesn't matter. They have to accept Christ. They have to, go by the program of what's right here. And if they don't,
when you have Jews,
it's all about choices.
When you have many Jews that are against what's happening in Gaza, and when you have all these white, basically what you guys call white Christians, supporting strongly with their Israel flags what's going on in Gaza, and they support Israel, and they say God is on our side, which is Israel's side. I think using the word Jew is general. It's no different than any other, like you say, black. I mean, It depends on the person, not the color or ethnicity.
Yeah. Well,
you see, the thing is, they chose it. Remember, you know, it's they call themselves Jews, but they're not. It's about that, right? You know, they're not children of God; they're children of the devil. It's a choice.
Yeah, but that could be with any race or ethnicity, not just Jewish.
Okay. Yeah, we go on from there.
Problem with that. Okay, we got somebody else who wants to talk, maybe. Always honest. Well, let's see if you are. What do you have to say?
Hi, how are you? Hope everybody's doing well. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
We hear you.
Okay, so just to clear everything up, Greenblatt from the ADL has already let everybody in the United States and the world know that Zionism and Judaism are one and the same, and being anti-Semitic is speaking about either one of those. Now, the reason that I think this whole thing is perpetuated through the Holocaust, which we kind of had a little discussion about this the last time I called, is because of this. I have a friend. We have been friends for 40 years. He's Jewish. When I speak with him about the Holocaust, first thing out of his mouth is my grandfather.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. My grandfather, my father, my whatever. Yeah. That's why. Because the lie just continues generation after generation. Nobody has seen anything, but there's no way they're going to look back historically on their family with the way that they hold their moral high ground above everybody else and say those SOBs were lying, that they lied about everything. There's no way that they'll ever admit it, particularly about their own heritage and their grandparents and great grandparents. So until even the ones, so basically the perpetuation of the Holocaust is the whole problem. Once that gets put down, you know, the pretend genocide is in the forefront, while the real genocide is bombing babies. So it's just, it's disgusting. It's so disgusting. And you know what? I feel for Diane because, or is it Diana?
Diana. I get confused.
It's Diana because it's one of the reasons I only make phone calls, because I have a family, I have a life, and I know what they're capable of doing.
You're right.
And if I was alone, it could be different and it would be different. But because I'm not, and because there's a whole bunch of people that live in my circle and my sphere of influence, I keep it to myself, and I try to put it out to the world this way, because it's really the only way that I feel not even safe, honestly. I think that every one of us is targeted if we've ever said anything, and particularly if we try to stand out in any real way like Ryan just is doing on a regular basis. He's trying to reach out to regular people, and there's just no way they're going to allow it. They are such liars. They're taught to lie to us at birth. They're coming out of their parents being told to lie to us, and I kind of had an epiphany about this, and it all goes back to Pike's letter where he talks about the three world wars and how the third war is supposed to be between the Muslims and the Jews, and that Israel is going to be destroyed and the Jews will be destroyed, but they'll be saved in the end. I think this is all about Trump. It's all about him, because if he comes back in and gets elected, if it even gets to that point, if he gets in, he is going to push the Noahide laws. And the first thing he's going to do is exactly what he is destined to do, because he's a Bolshevik. They will outlaw, not outlaw, but make it punishable by death. Anti-Semitism.
Prosecute.
He's already made comments that anybody who's anti-Semitic and making anti-Semitic behavior, we need to bring the death penalty back. Let's just bring it back. Okay. So he's already starting on the Noahide laws. Him and DeSantis are going to team up on the Noahide laws.
I don't doubt
DeSantis,
it.
Yeah. That's what's going to happen.
I don't
These
doubt it.
People
I mean,
are so conniving and, you know, I don't even say evil, because that would give them some kind of they don't believe in heaven. You realize that Jewish people
right.
do not, there's no heaven. So what they do here now is what counts.
Yeah.
That's why they can lie and cheat and steal and do whatever they, and kill.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they do it without a conscience, because they, why would they have a conscience? They have, no one is judging them. Literally no one, no one in the whole freaking world is judging them.
Right. Oh, I don't doubt it.
No.
Not a bit.
So, yeah, the admittance of the Holocaust and the baloney behind it is, although I got to say, I'm so proud of the young people. You know, I know they talk about the colonialism, and that's kind of why they're out there protesting, but that is not why. I think that's a scapegoat.
Yeah.
They're trying to hide the real, sorry, my dog's flipping up. They're trying to hide what's really happening. And it's the younger generation, just like green blood, blah, whatever his name is, said about TikTok, right? This is a generation thing. And you got a bunch of older people who know what's going on, but are so comfortable in their lives, and at this point are fearful, and they can't really do anything because everything's going to be taken away. And then you've got these young people that have no life in front of them. So they see what's going on. The youngsters might be the only hope at this point because they have the youth, they have the strength, and right now they have the anger and the motivation. They just need the education behind them to give them even more strength.
Well, the best part is they don't have the indoctrination of the wooden doors, you know, of the Holocaust, you know? So that's...
Well, they do, because that's, you know, you literally can't go to any school without the indoctrination of that kind. Let me stop the dog real quick before you... Cooper, come here. Get down. That's enough. No more barking.
Who let the dogs out?
Yeah, no kidding.
Sorry about that.
Who? Well, but you know what? I just want to say to Stormy's point, see, I think there's more than the 2%. Okay, that's a lie. But to Stormy's point, the Christian Zionists make up a huge amount of people, particularly in the United States. And Always Honest, AH, that was interesting. I've never heard Trump referred to as a Bolshevik, but I think you're spot on with that.
I agree.
That's exactly what he is.
Yeah.
And you know what else is interesting in the world? As far as everything goes, this is kind of my theory. I believe that the oligarchs came before any governments. So they've always had control.
Right.
From day one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is their way of doing it. All the lies, all the changes of the biblical information, just the constant indoctrination, the propaganda. It's just, I think they've gotten to a point where it's a little bit beyond control, but they're pushing for this. But I think they have underestimated the Muslim response. I don't think the Muslims are going to react the way that they want them to. I think there might be an anger and a hatred towards the Zionism and Israel and colonialism way bigger than it is against white people.
Right.
Hmm.
Let's see.
Hmm.
Okay, we got somebody else that's... Is that Julie Wise person want to come in the discussion here? What's going on there?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. What would you like to say?
What's up, guys? I just got banned from Gab, which sucks.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Gab.
How do you get banned from Gab now?
I know, right?
Nowadays, if you call out Torba's faggot gay brother Jacob, you get an automatic ban.
Well, they must look at you as like Satan or something.
I guess so. Persona non grata, anyway.
Yeah, they always use the term free speech as a way to say that they're fighting against the so-called oppressors of Gab.
Yeah, really? Well, obviously you hit a raw nerve with somebody.
Yeah,
there,
apparently.
Right?
All right, well, anyway.
Okay.
Understanding
just one thing is that... we get a lot of admonition from people say, you got to go out there and do this and do that and protest. You got to do this based on what's happening and the illumination and reminder from Diana and also seeing what's going on with Ryan. You've got to count the cost. It's important to understand what can happen. And you've got to understand, don't be caught off guard on this. Jesus says, when you get prepared to go to war, make sure you've got enough to take with you, that you know what you're facing, what you're up against.
Yeah. Rick, would you like to come in? Somebody, Rick?
Yeah, there's a Rick.
Hello, Rick.
He probably didn't think he was going to get in.
Hi, Rick. Well, you're
on, Rick.
Is Rick there? It's kind of waiting.
You even changed your name. I know you misspelled it, and then you changed it. So I imagine you want to say something.
Speak.
Forever hold your peace.
Yeah. That's right.
I guess not.
This is terrible.
Yeah, I guess that's right. Yeah. So
Julie Wise guy, we don't know your name here, but whatever. You made a comment that said Christian Zionism doesn't exist. What do you mean by that?
Good question.
Well, Zionism is another way of saying Jewish nationalism, as of Jewish people have the right to their own nation to preserve their cultural identity, but Jews themselves do not believe in Jesus or the Bible. They rely on their Talmudic prophecies. So in other words, it teaches them to lie, to steal, to kill, and it doesn't represent Christianity. None of those things say that you could steal, kill, or do whatever you want.
That's not what Christian Zionism means. Christian Zionism is people are Christians who support the Jews exclusively to the exclusion of Jesus Christ, basically.
Right.
They don't admit it, but that's what they're doing.
So how can you call yourself a Zionist and a Judeo-Christian and still support some of their Talmudic prophecies, like as if they're God's chosen people?
These people, and a lot of them, I think, aren't they more Protestant? Because I've never... I think they're more on the Protestant side. The first time I ever heard this was probably in like 2020. Somebody that was on the Trump movement at the time when I thought that was an answer, said to me they were a Christian Zionist. I had no clue what it meant.
It's an oxymoron. Jewy-wise is right.
Jewy-wise, you're 100% right. But most people don't even, they've never even heard of the Talmud.
Yeah.
They have no clue. They say that they know what's in the Quran because of the propaganda of what's been pushed out there. About what the supposed Muslims think of us, but nobody knows what the Jews think of us. Nobody.
Well, you see, I wonder why is it we tolerate these guys walking around with a secret book full of secret things that work against us, and yet we just let them do it. You know,
what are you going to do,
Uncle Murray? It's secret. Nobody knows about it. Yeah. It's secret.
I got another thing to mention. So, in the Talmud, it mentions to the Jewish people as to not mention some of their scriptures to the Goyim, as the Goyim would sought to kill them openly if they were to spread the truth about what's going on in their Talmud. And so, when a person asks what's in their Talmud, they lie about it, because lying is part of what the Talmud teaches.
Right, but if I only learned the word Talmud within the last 2 years, and I'm 60 years old, most people never even heard the word.
That's right.
I never heard of it. I think most Christians don't realize that these Jews and Judaism don't believe in Jesus.
You know, they've made it very clear. What are they, closing their ears? Like, I don't hear you, I don't hear you. They've made it very clear that they don't. All they're doing is attempting to associate the Bible lands with Christianity, although they have rejected him, and they still do. That's got to be brought out. My oldest child says, how can you support someone who has denied and rejected Jesus Christ? That's kind of important. They don't know.
Diane, I didn't know this.
I know. What I'm saying is so that you didn't know that the Jews rejected Jesus Christ?
No, I really didn't know.
Okay.
I didn't know that. There's a lot of Christians that don't know that. And I say it every moment I get.
Yeah, they're not reading their Bible, because very clearly stated in there. And Diane, I remember, I know you have learned, but we were reading about the problems that the Christians were having in Turkey, Asia.
Yes.
And that the various strong Jewish communities that were coming against them. Yeah. But see, that's also reason.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
I know you didn't know. And why not? Okay, that's something that we talked about today.
There's a mass exodus
from churches. All they have to do is tell the truth. Raise Jesus up as a standard, is what he said. And people will be coming back to church. But they're not doing it. People do not wish to be lied to anymore. Tell them the Jews have rejected Jesus Christ. Can't be more truthful than that. But can you imagine
a
501c3 the conditions that will be yanked from these churches? They start talking like that. That's their tax exempt status, by the way.
Right, the Johnson Amendment, exactly.
Tell
and then
the truth.
Be everybody, be, when you speak the truth, you get locked up.
That's right. Now, this would be worth it to me, that being locked up for this would be worth it. It's getting there. They're laying the groundwork for it, like what you're talking about. We were talking about before, the no-hide laws and how they're interacting with the anti-Semitism laws.
If there's anything you want to get locked up about, it's, see, this is why, you know, I wouldn't waste my time with
politics.
I wouldn't even waste my time unless it became a biblical issue that they've taken me up on. And then you go and make your defense from a biblical standpoint. See, the problem, Ryan's going against, he's walking into the den of Satan. Okay? They're waiting for him. He's trying to convince Satan that he's wrong. how do you do that? I mean, I got to give him credit. But see, I wouldn't waste my time doing that because look what they're going to do to you. How could it not happen? You're becoming a punching bag for them.
Yeah, true.
But it is interesting. I'll just it's 9:55, and we do have a song cue. But back to what Always Honest said about the Noahide laws, I put that into my Google alerts, and it used to be months would go by and I wouldn't get anything, and now it's much more frequent that I get notified of something of the Noahide laws. And I think she's right when she says that Trump is going to be the one. I never thought of it, but I think she's right.
Yes.
To be the one pushing these in. But that's what we're up against. But most people don't know, and you can't blame them for not knowing. I didn't know.
I blame the pastors. Okay, having them, they have failed. We can tell them. We can, as many as we can, understanding the Noahide laws and that they're coming against the believers in Jesus Christ. That's always been the goal.
All right, Diana.
The Goyim is going to impose them, by the way.
You're absolutely right. Absolutely right.
The Goyim are going to put it on themselves.
I hate to cut everybody short, but we got a 4-minute thing that we got to end with. I think we're going to go over anyway. But
I think so.
I want to thank everybody for being on tonight. I appreciate you calling in. That helps us out so we don't have to talk so much. And hopefully you can come on, you know, more in the future. Everybody is welcome to come on if you're respectful and you got something to say. We'd love to hear what you have to say. I mean, everybody's got something important to say, if you ask me anyway. So, okay, I don't know what we're ending with here. Diana,
a few minutes. We'll listen to a few minutes because this speaks to what the conversation was about. But thank you, everybody, for joining us.
And thank you, Diana, for joining.
Thank you. Okay, folks, good night.
Again, thank you. And we'll talk to you next week. All right. Thank you. Bye now. All right. That's all we got. I want to turn the sound off.
Yeah. If it's possible.
They control everything you see. Oh, Nana. You're given the illusion of having choice. But to them you are Goyim, just cattle for the slaughter of Adonai. In movies they portray them as Italians, but that's a big fat lie. Showing the Goyim with their battalions, bombing for each beat. The Russian face so full you can't see it. The Holocaust of hope. Just as they will not kill all your kids. Killing children by you. I know it when I read it. The Talmud's where they get it. Sacrificing all you. You think that they are chosen. You have to know. Ooh, na 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 na. A bitch. Trafficking organs all around, oh na na. Embedded in war politics all around. They want to genocide a white
folks. There can be no white race.
They'll move on to brown folks, oh na na.
Carefree sex slaving little girls and pimping out. Flying on lonely the air with the ruling class. Jumping on the Trump train with my younger car. Hey, I was with the big girls off thanks, Uncle Sam. Here you go, get out of jail free. Gotta pay a small fee, Donald Trump's my homie. Just like Hillary, and you can't. hey royalty, it's on JVT. I'll get you the way to NDC. Who can six slaves there be? I'll let the 6 million young gods be. All I gotta do is claim PTSD.
Half died, Obavich. Half of my kidneys in a cooler on a nah. Half of my kidneys in a cooler on a nah. He took it back to Israel, Mazel Tov, and sold it on the black market, and got some shekels for it.
Thank you, friends. I now have the honor and distinct pleasure of introducing the man of the year, Mr. Felix Sater.
In with Trump, Felix Sater.
Okay.
Yeah, he's in with Trump.
Yep. Oi to the bay.
It's a kind of utopia. Just the fact that the whole world will mix up with each other, that in, I don't know, 70, 80 years, there will be no white people anymore and only Chapultepec colored people.